Heartbreak House, a Fantasia in the Russian Manner on English Themes by George Bernard Shaw, Act 3. In the garden, Hector, as he comes out through the glass door of the poop,
finds Lady Utterword lying voluptuously in the hammock
on the east side of the flagstaff, in the circle of light cast by the electric arc,
which is like a moon in its opal globe.
Beneath the head of the hammock, a camp stool. On the other side of the flagstaff, on the long garden seat, Captain Shotover is asleep,
with Ellie beside him, leaning affectionately against him on his right hand.
On his left is a deck chair.
Behind them, in the gloom, Hesione is strolling about with Mangan.
It is a fine, still night. Moonless.
What a lovely night. It seems made for us.
The night takes no interest in us. What are we to the night?
Its beauty soaks into my nerves. In the night, there is peace for the old and hope for the young.
Well, is that remark your own?
No, only the last thing the captain said before he went to sleep.
I'm not asleep.
Randall is. Also Mr. Mazzini Dunn. Mangan too, probably.
No.
Well, you're there. I thought Hesione would have sent you to bed by this time.
Mrs. Hushabye comes to the back of the garden seat into the light with Mangan.
I think I shall. He keeps telling me he has a presentiment that he is going to die. I never met a man so greedy for sympathy.
But I have a presentiment. I really have. And you wouldn't listen.
I was listening for something else. There was a sort of splendid drumming in the sky. Did none of you hear it? It came from a distance and then died away.
I tell you, it was a train.
And I tell you, Alf, there is no train at this hour. The last is 9:45.
But a goods train.
Not on our little line. They tack a truck on to the passenger train. What can it have been, Hector?
Heaven's threatening growl of disgust at us useless, futile creatures. I tell you, one of two things must happen. Either out of that darkness some new creation will come to supplant us as we have supplanted the animals, or the heavens will fall in thunder and destroy us.
We have not supplanted the animals, Hector. Why do you ask heaven to destroy this house, which could be made quite comfortable if Hesione had any notion of how to live? Don't you know what is wrong with it?
We are wrong with it. There is no sense in us. We are useless, dangerous, and ought to be abolished.
Nonsense. Hastings told me the very first day he came here, nearly 24 years ago, what is wrong with the house.
What? The numbskull said there was something wrong with my house.
I said Hastings said it, and he is not in the least a numbskull.
What's wrong with my house?
Just what is wrong with the ship, Papa. Wasn't it clever of Hastings to see that?
The man's a fool. There's nothing wrong with a ship.
Yes, there is.
But what is it? Don't be aggravating, Addie.
Guess.
Oh, demons. Daughters of the Witch of Zanzibar, demons.
Not a bit. I assure you, all this house needs to make it a sensible, healthy, pleasant house with good appetites and sound sleep in it is horses.
Horses? What rubbish!
Yes, horses. Why have we never been able to let this house? Because there are no proper stables. Go anywhere in England where there are natural, wholesome, contented, and really nice English people, and what do you always find? That the stables are the real center of the household, and that if any visitor wants to play the piano, the whole room has to be upset before it can be opened. There are so many things piled on it. I never lived until I learned to ride. And I shall never ride really well because I didn't begin as a child. There are only two classes in good society in England, the equestrian classes and the neurotic classes. It isn't mere convention. Everybody can see that the people who hunt are the right people and the people who don't are the wrong ones.
There is some truth in this. My ship made a man of me and a ship is the horse of the sea.
Exactly how Hastings explained your being a gentleman.
Not bad for a numbskull. Bring the man here with you next time. I must talk to him.
Why is Randall such an obvious rotter? He is well-bred. He has been at a public school and a university. He's been in the Foreign Office. He knows the best people and has lived all his life among them. Why is he so unsatisfactory? So contemptible? Why can't he get a valet to stay with him longer than a few months? Just because he is too lazy and pleasure-loving to hunt and shoot. He strums the piano and sketches and runs after married women and reads literary books and poems. He actually plays the flute, but I never let him bring it into my house. If he would only...
She is interrupted by the melancholy strains of a flute coming from an open window above.
She raises herself indignantly in the hammock.
Randall, you have not gone to bed. Have you been listening?
The flute replies pertly.
How vulgar. Go to bed instantly, Randall.
The window is slammed down.
How dare you! How can anyone care for such a creature?
Addie, do you think Ellie ought to marry poor Alfred merely for his money?
What's that? Mrs. Hushabye, are my affairs to be discussed like this before everybody?
I don't think Randall is listening now.
Everybody is listening. It isn't right.
But in the dark, what does it matter? Ellie doesn't mind, do you, Ellie?
Not in the least. What is your opinion, Lady Utterword? You have so much good sense.
But it isn't right. It...
Mrs. Hushabye puts her hand on his mouth.
Oh, very well.
How much money have you, Mr. Mangan?
Really, no, I can't stand this.
Nonsense, Mr. Mangan. It all turns on your income, doesn't it?
Well, if you come to that, how much money has she?
None.
You were answered, Mr. Mangan. And now, as you have made Miss Dunn throw her cards on the table, you cannot refuse to show your own.
Come, Alf, out with it. How much?
Well, if you want to know, I have no money and never had any.
Alfred, you mustn't tell naughty stories.
I'm not telling you stories. I'm telling you the raw truth.
Then what do you live on, Mr. Mangan?
Traveling expenses and a trifle of commission.
What more have any of us but traveling expenses for our life's journey?
But you have factories and capital and things.
People think I have. People think I am an industrial Napoleon. That's why Miss Ellie wants to marry me. But I tell you, I have nothing.
Do you mean that the factories are like Marcus's tigers? They don't exist?
Well, they exist all right enough, but they're not mine. They belong to the syndicates and shareholders and all sorts of lazy, good-for-nothing capitalists. I get money from such people to start the factories. I find people like Miss Dunn's father to work them and keep a tight hand so as to make them pay. Of course I make them keep me going pretty well, but it's a dog's life and I don't own anything.
Alfred, you are making a poor mouth of it to get out of marrying Ellie.
I am telling the truth about my money for the first time in my life, and it's the first time my word has ever been doubted.
How sad. Why don't you go in for politics, Mr. Mangan?
Go in for politics? Where have you been living? I am in politics.
I'm sure. I beg your pardon. I never heard of you.
Let me tell you, Lady Utterword, that the Prime Minister of this country asked me to join the government without even going through the nonsense of an election as the dictator of a great public department.
As a conservative or a liberal?
Oh, no such nonsense. As a practical businessman. What are you all laughing at?
Oh, Alfred.
You! Who have to get my father to do everything for you.
You, who are afraid of your own workmen.
You, with whom three women have been playing cat and mouse all the evening.
You must have given an immense sum to the party funds, Mr. Mangan.
Not a penny out of my own pocket. The syndicate found the money. They knew how useful I should be to them in government.
This is most interesting and unexpected, Mr. Mangan. And what have your administrative achievements been so far?
Achievements? Well, I don't know what you call achievements, but I've jolly well put a stop to the games of the other fellows in the other departments. Every man of them thought he was going to save the country all by himself and do me out of the credit and out of my chance of a title. I took good care that if they wouldn't let me do it, they shouldn't do it themselves either. I might not know anything about my own machinery, but I know how to stick a ramrod into the other fellows. And now, they all look the biggest fools going.
And in heaven's name, what do you look like?
I look like a fellow that was too clever for all the others, don't I? If that isn't a triumph of practical business, what is?
Is this England or is it a madhouse?
Do you expect to save the country, Mr. Mangan?
Well, who else will? Will your Randall save it?
Randall? Certainly not.
Will your brother-in-law save it with his mustache and his fine talk?
Yes, if they will let me.
Yeah. Will they let you?
No. They prefer you.
Very well, then. As you're in the world where I'm appreciated and you're not, you'd best be civil to me, hadn't you? Who else is there but me?
There is Hastings. Get rid of your ridiculous sham democracy and give Hastings the necessary powers and a good supply of bamboo to bring the British native to his senses. He will save the country with the greatest ease.
It had better be lost. Any fool can govern with a stick in his hand. I could govern that way. It is not God's way. The man is a numbskull.
The man is worth all of you rolled into one. What do you say, Miss Dunn?
I think my father would do very well if people did not put upon him and cheat him and despise him because he is so good.
I think I see Mazzini Dunn getting into Parliament or pushing his way into the government. We've not come to that yet, thank God. What do you say, Mrs. Hushabye?
Oh, I say it matters very little which of you governs the country, so long as we govern you.
We? Who is we, pray?
The devil's granddaughters, dear. The lovely women.
Fall, I say, and deliver us from the lures of Satan.